The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Muskie Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. We're doing another Q&A. You know who's on the other line. You think it's Chaz Martin, but it's not. Chaz had a dinner date or something. So my second choice is this guy named Joe Bucher.
Hey, you know, that's what happens when you're in love.
Yeah, you know, it's the best. Guys, this is the best guy I could get on short notice. I apologize. You know, we're trying our best here. It is a pandemic. He's caught a couple muskies, though, I've heard. So what I did want to talk about, Joe, what I got you on here, dude, you got the killer new episode out and the killer new vlog. And the guy in your new episode, the new muskie episode from last Friday, is probably the most handsome muskie fisherman I've ever seen.
And he's on again this week.
He's on again this week, folks. You know what? Tune in.
I would disagree with the handsome part.
Oh.
But I will say this. He's the best damn musician I've ever met.
Well, I got that going for me, folks.
You are really amazing, I'll tell you. You are an amazing musician. And you're not too bad at catching muskies either.
I can pull it out every now and again, my friend. I'm no guru. I'm not the guru
There's
yet.
There's only one guru.
There is only one guru. But you got that. I really did. One thing I tell you, listeners, I know everybody listening out there, check out the new vlog Joe just did. The plumber's tape trick, right? Because here's the thing, and I wanted to pick on you on this for a second, right? When I watched that, here's what I realized, because you said, why don't you sell it pre-stock like that? And correct me if I'm wrong, I might be going far afield here. But you guys sell the baits with the stock, you know, 2-0s, 1-0s, whatever they may be.
Yeah.
You sell that because that touches the most anglers. So when most people will be using that product, it's appropriate for all of you guys that are serious musky fishermen. Get serious about bait mods, because you're fishing when the masses are not. And that's the thing, is like that question of how do I modify these baits? Why do I modify these baits? That's what keeps resonating with me. You go, you know, as a product line, you guys have to go, this is what we're doing. This works most often, but be willing to make those mods, because dude, I mean, goodness, my whole winter has been dominated, you know, that shallow raiders, you know, 7s and 5s and 9s, and modifying those things to make them situationally appropriate.
Well, if you want, in the vlog, I refer 3 times to modification per situation. Mm-hmm. Modification per situation. I do it 3 times. Modification per situation inside that 12-minute vlog. And what I'm trying to get, you know, this hardcore group of muskie anglers that is also very, you know, very dialed into Muskie 360.
Yep.
And these guys that are watching my vlogs and listen to my vlogs every week, they're you know, what I'm trying to do is take their game to another level. And guys, gals out there, when you're listening to, you know, to this podcast and when you're watching this vlog, the key thing that I'm trying to talk about is take one lure. In this case, you know, a couple of vlogs ago, I talked about take the technique you're weak at and get better at it. Now, in this vlog, I said, okay, take a lure you're very confident in and then figure out more ways to use it. And you know this inside out. I see you do it all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and you know, it's like grab the guitar you love to play. It's grab the lure that you really, when you want to catch a fish today, you know, you're going into a spot you know's got one, and you know, you got all these other baits, but then you grab this one lure because it's your favorite. And what I'm getting at in this vlog is, you know, I just take one lure. I said, okay, now figure out more ways to make this lure work.
Man.
Modification. Yep. Per situation.
Dude, and it's one thing, actually, I know you listen to every second of every podcast. I know you listen, you and the wife listen daily to the podcast, right? So every you're hanging on every word that I say. And last week we were talking about, and me and Chaz sort of got on the tip of like, don't be a bait owner, be a bait user. And I think like your vlog, it's what you're coming at it such a way, because you go, how many guys do you know their boat's loaded with stuff to the hilt, and it's just like, what good is a carpenter's tools if he doesn't know how to use them? you know,
and then taking a tool that a seasoned carpenter, you know, would he looks at those tools completely different than anybody else's, because he's got little things he uses those tools for that maybe they weren't meant for. And you know what I was dealing with there, even in his last vlog with the shallow mm-hmm. meter, but is like I said, you know, all of these lures are great lures, and when these lures withstand the time.
Yeah,
you know, when they withstand decades, and I mentioned other lures, I mentioned the Suic, for example.
Right.
You know, it's an old lure that's withstood, you know, the test of time. And
absolutely.
What really good anglers are confident in these lures, and like my shallow raider. And all I'm saying is, you know, it's like the episode that you and I will feature this weekend is, geez, you know, we got dropping water. And the blade bite is not only off, it doesn't exist. We got somebody in the boat throwing blades every day for 12 hours. And it's mostly the guru. Yeah, but we're not moving fish at all on blades because those fish are not chasing.
Right.
And, you know, and we're moving a few fish on jerk baits, but that jerk and rise buoyant jerk bait motion is keeping the bait too shallow, and because it's buoyant, it's forcing you to work the bait too fast for the situation that you and I were faced with in this episode. And you know, so putting bigger hooks on takes some buoyancy away.
Yeah.
Add a little plumber's tape to the belly, you know, almost made it neutrally to negative buoyant. And so, you know, when you put those things together, again, modification per situation. I needed, with dropping water, I needed a bait that would run deeper,
mm-hmm.
stay in the fish zone, that, you know, stay closer to the bottom, and then just hang there. And then the day before, you essentially did exactly the same thing with the depth raider.
Well, it's a learning from the king, baby. You know, you just steal.
My musky
career, folks, for you listening. If you want to get good, just steal from Joe Bucher continually. A lot of stuff I pretend I came up with it. It's like, oh yeah, I did that.
So. No, you know what? That's not entirely true, folks. I've seen this guy do some modifications on baits that are really outside thinking outside the box. You've got some things, I won't even mention them because I know you haven't mentioned them, shown them to anybody, but you've done some things with baits that are like, I mean, really, it's like, nobody's thinking about doing this, but you're doing it and it's working.
Well,
and that's thinking outside the box and modification per situation.
You know, and God, we're on this tip. We got a ton of questions we've got to get to, but the one thing I say to this is, like, if you're reading articles and taking all this and like how to extrapolate from that, the guys that know when to do this know when to do it. And if you're new to that game, know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You know,
Kenny Rogers.
And it's one of those deals of like, read
God rest his soul.
God, is he dead? Yeah, he just died.
Yeah, he died. Crazy.
I don't. Who hasn't died? That's the question. So,
yeah, but yeah, it just happened.
But it's one of those things of like, you know, reading those situations, and I think a lot of it that comes into play, like when we're saying like you knew to modify those baits and when to throw those baits that have more weight on them. You've got to have confidence in your patterning before this starts to
yes.
work.
And you made a statement last week on the show, and then uh-huh. you make the same statement this week, coming week on the show with me. And you said, when they're not chasing, take the bait to them.
Take the
game right to them.
That's an original Steve Paulism, right? Take the fight to the muskies. I made that up myself.
But you mentioned it, though.
I stole that from you, but that's the thing. Put it in their face. So,
yeah.
Well, Joe, me and you could talk. Oh, crap. I got something important. I was about to go into questions, but I got super mega important. Guys, everybody listen to the podcast. One of the funnest things we're going to do in a while. We're going to steal from Joe Bucher. Joe Bucher, I'm putting you on the spot. You're donating a bait.
Yes.
Just say yes. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So if you're listening to the podcast, here's the deal, guys. I cue the Price is Right theme song. I'll try to edit it in. You know, if I don't edit it in, imagine in your heads. Here's the game show. If you go to iTunes or the Google Play Store where you downloaded the Muskie 360 app, you better leave a 5-star review for the app on both formats, right? Because we just want more reviews. Why not? There's tons of you that have the app, but go there, leave a 5-star review on the app. The best comment talking about that you enjoy the podcast, right? I'll call you out on a future podcast, and we're going to mail you a bait that we're personally going to steal from Joe Booker's garage that you're going to sign and you're going to ship, right?
Absolutely.
Not on the spot. Are you in duress? Are you being held hostage here on the podcast?
No, I'm totally in on this, and I think that it's exciting to do this. And in fact, we're going to do it with a couple original Booker Tales, original 700 nice. Booker Tales, and also signature.
Dude, how cool is that? So if you're listening, all you great listeners out there, if you want a Booker bait from the Booker stash, and this guy's garage is like ridiculous, I'm just telling you right now.
It's not as bad as yours. Your dad's collection is number one in the world. Your dad has the best. Folks, Stephen Paul's dad, who just recently passed away, yep. by the way, and I'm sorry about that, Steve.
But, it happens
you know,
to all of us.
Your dad's a great muskie angler, and his collection of baits was second. And he's got one of the greatest collections of muskie lures in the world.
I have Booker baits in the package that Joe doesn't have, folks. That's how crazy this is. Joe's all bragging. He just calls me up one day. He said, "Hey, Steve, hold on. Let me try to give you my best Joe. Hey, Steve, this Joe, eh? You know, we're bringing back the 10 buck, eh?" I don't know. I don't know how to do a Wisconsin accent. But anyway, he calls me and
there's
says,
"There's no A's in it. No, that's the Upper Peninsula."
Well, I don't dare call you a youper, or you'll drive down here and shoot me.
No,
but
no.
That's like for all you rednecks, being called a youper is like, you know, the same thing. Anyway, and we're talking about that 10 buck, and I've got them new in the pack from like, when did those come out? Back in the day, like mid 80s?
Oh my gosh, yeah, early 80s.
So, I gotta rag out the dude because do you know why Joe's on the podcast? Because Chaz had a dinner date with Nan Nan. So,
mm-hmm. Yep.
But anyway,
he's in love.
He's in love. Anywho, yeah. I was talking to Chaz about, I'm still mad at you guys. I'm very mad at you. I've not received my 3-foot-tall Booker trophy because it says on the back of the package, certified scales, mm-hmm. photo proof that's cut on a Booker tail. Where's my trophy, Joe? I need. Do you remember that on the back of the package?
Oh, absolutely. We sent them out, but I never got your. I never got your registration. My, number, so, no way. But I'll tell you what, Steve.
I'll call
a trophy place and get you one just so you're happy.
The redhead's looking at you, going, "That don't you dare waste a nickel on a trophy for that ding dong." That's a little joke for you guys that have had Booker baits for that long. And for everybody that's not listening, tell them what used to be on the back of the pack, Joe.
Well, we used to have an annual contest, and the, you know, the largest muskie every year caught on a Booker product, we would send them a trophy and a free bait.
How cool was that?
Yeah, and it went on for pretty much the whole time that Beth and I had the company, and you know, which was the first. You know, 15, 20 years of the manufacturing. So, yeah, it was kind of cool. And there were some awfully nice fish caught, but of course, those lures continue to catch them. And you know, but I never did get that registration from you.
It's well past its date at this point. I've lost to a technicality on my Booker trophy. But anyway, if you want a free Booker bait from Joe Booker stash, leave a 5-star review on Apple. Leave a 5-star review for the app on Google Play. I will read all those. I will call you out what I think the best comment is, talking about the podcast or talking about what you like on the app. We'll get that bait out to you. I don't know all the legalese, like at the end of these things, there'll be like no purchase necessary or blah, 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 blah. So I'll say all that real quickly, and that will cover us. First question. You ready, Joe Booker?
Yes.
Kyle says, "I'm a big fan of the podcast. What's the best option for fishing heavily pressured lakes, and what are your southern reservoir tactics?" So what are we talking about, pressure, and what are we talking southern reservoirs? What do you think, buddy?
Well, let me handle the pressure side of things, then you can handle the southern reservoir side.
Well, it's convenient.
The pressure, yeah. Well, yeah. I'm on the pressure side of things, you know, really, I mean, I made a living doing that up here, and it, you know, and it's just gotten worse up here. But you know, in this neck of the woods, there are literally muskie tournaments every day.
Yeah,
on most of these lakes up here, and there, you know, there are so many good muskie fishermen. Everybody that lives up here, or it was within 2 hours of this place,
they've got a clue. You know, yeah,
they've got and they're fishing. And so, you know, the way to, you know, you and I talk about it again.
This crankbaits, baby.
Yes. This episode coming up this weekend is, you know, you, and it comes right out of your mouth. You said, you know, we dealt with a little bit of fishing pressure when you and I were up there, but it's like, we're coming from behind these guys, downsizing and getting tighter to the fish. You go downsize and get closer to the fish. And in any fishing pressure situation, when the fish are pressured, they behave a lot like cold front fish, and you just got to get closer to them. Yeah. And usually downsize presentations. And one last thing, especially on waters around here, one thing that really gets the big fish in heavy pressure, especially when you also have jet skiers, water skiers, and that kind of stuff, and tournaments, is night fishing. You know, the night fishing, I remember speaking, just not to get too off on a tangent, but I remember night fishing back towards the end of my guiding career, and Spence Petros came up, and he was speaking at the biggest muskie tournament up here, the World Championship muskie thing that goes on Eagle River, 1,000 anglers. And Spence gets done with his presentation, and you know, somebody asks him, he says, "Work, so what? You going to go fishing with us tomorrow, Spence, out there?" And he says, "No, but I'm going out all night with Joe Booker." And we went out that night, and Spence and I, you know, it was a tough tournament overall, which a lot of times it's like that.
Right.
And we took advantage of all the fishing pressure and all that boat traffic. Went out that night. We caught 9 muskies and six walleyes.
Man, that dude. The thing is like doing something different, because we're always banging on the podcast. We're banging in articles. And me and Chaz talked about, we were actually jokingly call it Booker 316 when we quote Crankbait Secrets here on the podcast, where we call it chapter and verse. Kyle, fish crankbaits. I mean, I see it on my boat every week, like, because now, you know, as a guide in the modern era, this golden age of muskies where everybody's got a billion muskie baits. Guys show up and they can do one thing or two things. They can throw a bucktail, or they can throw a bucktail and a bulldog. Crankbait fishermen, we have a lot of crankbait owners, but we don't have a lot of crankbait fishermen. Okay. Right. And if you want to stand out from the pack, learn your crankbaits. Once again, read stuff on the app, but I can't tell you enough. Is Crankbait Secrets changed my life? Crankbait Secrets changed Chaz Martin's life, and that's like the lofty tome that is the chapter and verse of fishing a crankbait for muskies, in my humble opinion. As far as like the southern reservoir thing, once again, like if you're talking this time of year, you can't trust water temperatures, because what happens, like, and a good reference, one of my buddies, Josh Krieger from Wallhanger Guide Service, he's up in your neck of the woods, right? And I've told you about Josh Joe, the guy that was sleeping on an island that one time, and I pick him up. He's out there sleeping in February in a tent, you know, like this guy's a nut. And his joke for up in that area is, you know, we throw top water from ice out to ice up, right? And, you know, and it's a viable option. When you're thinking these southern reservoirs, Kyle, is really start thinking about different seasonality. You can't take northern Wisconsin tactics and apply them to the spring in the south, and that's why that crankbait, the rattle trap bait or bite we've all heard about on Cave Run for how many decades now. You know, you could throw a 500 over that, you could throw a Meps giant killer over those fish and they won't respond. They want that profile and they want that vibration. So the thing I'd say on pressured southern reservoirs is get really good at crankbaits, because that's going to put you in a small percentile of people that are fishing them. You know, everybody else is going to be throwing small blades in the spring. That's it. They're going to throw rattle traps and they're going to throw small blades and they're going to burn them. The other thing, and I'm not going to get on a huge tangent, Joe, but you can say this. There's not just one way to fish a rattle trap either.
That's for sure.
You know, if we're fishing a JB Rattler, a lot of what you have done with JB Rattlers is look at some of these bass guys, because bass guys are really smart. You don't have to straight retrieve a rattle trap. That's all I'm going to say on that thing. We got a ton of questions. We'll keep moving. Kevin asks, when, and I already told you about this, when you ready for this, drum roll please. Kevin asks, when is Joe putting the BBs back in a top raider, or is there a reason they were taken out? He says, I absolutely love top raiders, especially on river systems, and I use them outside of current. He says, P.S., I love the podcast. The podcast loves you, Kevin. Why'd you take the BBs out, Joe? What do you think?
I didn't do it. But I didn't do it. So I will check into that. But you know, one of the things I did tell you off the air is that you have this group of anglers on one hand that hates rattles, you know, and that wants rattleless baits, and you have this other group of anglers that wants them. And for a while, the group that didn't want them was kind of outweighing the other, other group that wanted them. It's like, oh, it's spooking all the fish. The rattles spook the fish. So anyways, we even thought about coming out with rattle-free, you know, depth raiders and ones with rattles and with all the lures. It'd be just because of that. And I know it's a problem.
I'll say this. Here's my take on that deal, right? Kevin, do you own a drill? That's all I'm going to say. Because you're talking to the mod king right now. I've got JB Rattlers with, actually, you know this, I've got JB Rattlers with less rattles in them because I'm not afraid to just drill a hole in the thing. I'll put more, I'll put less. They're just pieces of plastic, folks. You can do whatever you want with them. They're hollow. Just take an educated guess and a drill and you got rattles. Then you're standing out from the pack. Little JB weld on the JB bait and we're good. All right, Duane says, I would like to ask Joe Bucher how he would attack a Cisco based lake. This has trout. Oh, what is it? Prequi. Hold on, Joe. You know, I'm like mentally stifled here. So
it's not true. I mean, you're borderline genius.
Well, I'm borderline retarded, but it's one of those fun. It's spelled P-R-E-S-Q-U-E. Prequail?
What is this?
I would like to. Okay. So let's just say Isle Lake. But anyway.
Suspended baitfish.
Yeah, he's looking for Cisco in this Isle Lakes during the summer thermocline. He says, I'm trying to find them during the summer thermocline. He's looking for the biggest muskie in the system, in a Cisco based system. He wants to hear it from the Book Daddy. What do you got for Duane?
Oh, it's that's something I have done a lot back in the guiding years, and it's get out over the open water. It's a trolling bite. You know, if you really want to be successful at it, it's a trolling bite. You need to, you know, one of the best, you know, the modern day electronics will give you a lot of visuals as to what depth the fish are at, and you don't necessarily want to be, you know, where the Ciscos are at, because a lot of times Ciscos are below the thermocline. But, you know, muskies that relate to them, and by the way, muskies feed most of the time on cold water bait fish, including trout, before and after the thermocline, before the thermocline forms and after the thermocline is gone. Otherwise, they're, you know, a lot of times the cold water bait fish end up getting below that level, and they stay down there until the thermocline dissipates. That's why there's such a big Cisco feed in the falls, because now the Ciscos become available to these muskies more often. And I know I saw a lot of folks are out there going, yes, but there are those other warm water bait fish that, you know, hang in the upper part of the thermocline. So you need to develop, you need to know where that thermocline is. And honestly, by turning up by going manual and turning up the sensitivity on your sonar, you will see it. You'll see this line. So you want to be above that. I'm assuming, because of the way he's describing it, that this is a deep thermocline lake that is water with depths, you know, real clear water. And I'm guessing that thermocline is over 20 feet. And when you have over 20 feet of water, you need to fish deep diving crankbaits, and you need to troll them. Trolling off boards is always even better, because you're keeping your boat path away from those fish. So boards, depth raiders, and snap-on weights. Snap-on weights are fantastic for this. So, in other words, you have these weights that the walleye guys develop, and the trout guys develop, that snap on. You snap them about, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 feet up, in front of your crankbait, and, you know, a 1 ounce or 2 ounce weight. And now you have to determine how deep that lure is running. So there's some experimentation that starts the process. But once, here's the key too with this open water trolling. I'm gonna do a lot of that, by the way. That's one of the new things I'm gonna be doing this summer, is doing a whole new series of episodes on this kind of stuff.
Because we got a little secret about the new Book Daddy rig, don't we?
Yeah, we're gonna. You and I we talked about this a little.
You're in trouble.
About an hour ago.
2020 is gonna be nasty. I'm telling you.
Yeah, we're gonna have fun, but you know, it's one of those things that one of the things about trolling, before we get to the next question, one of the things about trolling that's very important is that don't think for a moment that it's just zombie trolling out there. And if you just throw baits out and just roll over the open water and you'll stumble on a fish here and there, yeah, you're gonna do that. But if you know how much line you have out, how deep the lure is running, if you know those numbers, then you can duplicate it again and again and again, and you can get more fish and be more successful more often. So taking advantage of both electronics and keeping notes, mental notes, written down notes, you know, a little notepad in front of you, how much line do you have out? Mm-hmm. Line counter reels are an important part of that deal. But it's a trolling game, it's a deep water game, it's an open water game, and that's the best way I can describe what our friend Dwayne and his letter to us. I think that's the best way I can, the best advice I can give him is, you know, and spot bait fish, you see spot bait fish on your sonar. Those fish are usually in a home range, depending upon the wind conditions. We could talk about this for hours.
Right. Oh, yeah.
But these bait fish in open water have a movement and a home range according to the wind direction, and which moves plankton and things around, and forces them to face into the little current that's out there. So you know, these fish will move around over open water. They still have these home ranges. So once you start dialing in where those fish are in the summer, as long as the weather conditions remain somewhat the same, and you have a GPS and you can pinpoint their location, that's how you get back to them. And then you just got to get the bait down to where they are.
What my answer is, do what he just said. Got listeners, I'm so sorry. This is the best person I could get on short notice. He's trying his best.
I'm filling in for the dude. For the dude and the guru.
Those are big shoes. big shoes. All right. Okay. We've got another Kevin here. He says, what are your early Southern presentations?
Ooh. Early Southern? No, that's a question for you.
Well, JB Rattler, period. 6-inch depth raider, 500 series Booker tail. Hellhounds, Phantoms. I'm trying to think of stuff. If you can find them, the remember the Bill Norman DR2s, Joe?
Man, those are great lures.
Ooh, Lord. Those are what I'm thinking about a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Here's like my breakdown on that, Kevin. It's like, and really those baits are sort of covering the gamut there. 500 Booker tail if I think the fish are hot. Right. JB Rattler, if I think they're kind of hot, you know, baby depth raider or shallow raider. I should have said shallow raider in there. You know, if I'm over shallow stuff, baby shallow raider. If I'm over slightly deeper stuff, I'm going with a baby DR. If I'm fishing hard ledges and hard breaks, that Bill Norman with the metal lip. And if it's just like complete shutdown, Phantoms and Hellhounds really slow. I mean, that's sort of like, that's the Southern recipe in my book, you know, for early spring. What you'll find is that just everybody gets up on the flats and they throw any rattle trap they can get their hands on and just burn it. And that's it. So anything that you can do to stand out from that. But those are like my go-tos, man. The next one up is Rhett. Rhett says, we are fishing for tiger muskies. The lake we are fishing currently has... how did he say it? Man, you know I don't pre-screen these, and I can barely read at like a third grade level. Hold on. So we're fishing tiger muskies. The lake we're fishing currently is low. There's no vegetation in the water. Where do tiger muskies go when there's no vegetation to hide in, and what's the best thing to throw at them? I'm guessing this is a West Coaster.
Mm-hmm.
Which is mm-hmm. reminds me quickly, if you remember me calling you in sheer terror.
Hello, Mr. Booker. Can you help me? Because I'm terrified.
That's the guru voice, by the way.
By the way, that folks, that is the real Stephen Paul.
This is exactly. This is what I sound like. This is all put on. Hey, Mr. Booker, help me.
I ran into a thing, and me and you went at length for this because it's about patterning. So, if Rhett is on the West Coast, and I'm talking Idaho, Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, that area, when I've been out there and I'm talking this time of year, March, late March, April, those fish were on that first break. Remember I called you and I said, dude, every fish is on the first break. And I kicked their butt on a jointed DR.
Yep, I remember that. In fact, I remember. Wasn't this guy? Didn't you do some music favors for this guy? Wasn't he a musician or something?
Yeah,
or
a producer. Yeah,
yeah. And then he invited you out there, and he had never fished for him or had never had success or something. And you smoked him.
Oh, we smoked him. Here's the thing, Rhett. I don't know exactly where you're at, but here's the deal. For you West Coast guys, and I can see who's downloaded the app. I know I got some of these Washington State guys. I know I got some Oregon guys out there. Get on those redwood stumps. Up on these shallow edges, there are redwood stumps that are 5 feet across. Everybody that's in the North Woods or in the South, just tune out, and you're going, this guy's lost his mind. Those fish are on those stumps. And in the early spring, what happens, they're coming up shallow just like that shoreline cover. I mean, it's the same as anywhere we go. You know, the same thing, Joe, is like they're going to come in and relate to cover on structure. Whether it be a tiger or be a true muskie, if there's no vegetation, they're still going to relate to cover and structure. So focus on the cover and focus on the structure. A lot of these man-made reservoirs out there, there's these big flats. If you're fishing West Coast stuff, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Those redwood stumps are 3 to 5 feet across. They'll hold 4 or 5 fish at times. And so focus on those. And it's me and you were laughing earlier about Buck Perry, right? And Buck Perry used to always say, well, if they're not shallow and they're not medium, they're deep, right? They got to be somewhere. And it's
Somewhere in between.
Or somewhere in between. So I would start there on that shallow shoreline cover and work out. What I've found when those water temperatures are in the 50s, 50 to 55, it was like the first break. You know, it was like clockwork, which goes back to your Latonic Zone vlog you did. If you're
littoral, by the way.
Oh, Latonic, littoral. Kill me. Okay. It's late at night. I'm calling you.
You're absolutely right, though. You know, it's that first primary break line. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're not shallow, they're usually, most of the time, they're at that somewhere on that primary break line. And that primary break line, you know, Kevin is really. It's the first other people, you know, in the old days we used to call that the drop off,
right?
You know, where you visually see a change of light, you see a change of water color, you see that there's a change of depth,
right.
And that's a lot of times that's where the fish are, and then those fish will often relate to not only the topography of the break line, but if there's any kind of cover on that break line, that's where they are.
Well, the one thing I want to ask you, and we're famous for massive tangents here on the podcast. Me and Chaz will go on prattling for hours, but I want to ask you, because it's something that we've got to ask a few other questions. I'm sure it pertains to this guy if he's chasing tigers. These tiger muskies that are stocked on the West Coast do not like coming in the 8 that much, right?
Tigers in general.
Right, and I've written stuff about an article that I talked about called Midcast Triggers, you know, before we had the app out and stuff. If you're targeting stock tigers, what would be sort of your take on that, Joe? Like, where are you gonna like back off further to give them a little bit more time to follow the baits, or what's sort of your game plan?
Well, you know, I had a vlog on this a few weeks back, probably a month ago, where I talked about one of the things. You know, most anglers, musk anglers, are maybe a little bit less prone to this, but most anglers. don't realize there's three, there's really three parts of the cache you need to be concerned with. And most of your strikes in most muskie situations come in the first 5% of your retrieve or the last 5% of your retrieve. And so, you know, if you've got to make sure that you do something special when your bait first hits the water. I mean, in other words, you got to make sure your reel's engaged and you're on that bait right away, so it's not sinking. Especially if you're fishing shallow water, that's a high percentage strike zone situation. 40%, 30-40% of your fish hit there, and then then regular muskies under a lot of conditions, 40-50% of those fish hit at the boat. So, but most anglers spend most of their time paying attention to the mid part of their retrieve. And in this case, what I suggest, how do you make the mid part of your retrieve better? Mm-hmm. The way you make the middle part of your retrieve better is do not do anything rhythmic. You know, try not to get into a rhythm. If you get into a rhythm in the middle of your retrieve, you're doing the, you know, if you just have too much rhythm, whether you're working a straight retrieve lure or a jerk bait, whatever, is you've got to change it up. You know, you have stops and starts, speeds up, you know, slow down. You know, that fish you caught last week on the show, you know, that was you hit like the apex of the retrieve, and all of a sudden you stopped and you said you were just kind of like working at like a with the reel handle, like a little jerk bait. And those are the kind of things that when you know, if you imagine a muskie that's reluctant to come to the boat, like these Clearwater Tigers a lot of times are, you got to get those fish to hit it mid retrieve. And the way you do that is by mixing things up.
Absolutely. So that's some sage like advice right there, Book Daddy. Sage like advice.
That's why Chaz calls me the Book Daddy.
The Book Daddy. Next up is Connor. Connor says, I'd like to hear your thoughts and preferences on skirt materials for blade baits. He says, Tensor Flashaboo on bucktails, rubber skirts. What are the pros and cons? Are there certain situations for all this stuff? Does it come down to personal preference? Thanks, guys. Connor, thank you for listening. What's your preference? I know what your preference is.
Well, you know what's funny about that is a generation ago, nobody bought spinners that didn't have natural bucktail on them.
Really?
No, and this is before, you know, this is when you were a little tiny Steven Paul. But there was a time. There was a time we came out with we were going to come out with a full line of, we called them tinsels back then. Now they're called flashaboo, but they're a full line of these flashy tinsel products. And a few of our competitors, and namely MEPS, you know, MEPS was a great company, fantastic company. And they had all these beautiful natural squirrel tail and bucktail lures. And they came out with another product line where they used a synthetic. That's what all these other products are, synthetics.
Hey, you know they'll still buy you know MEPS will still buy your squirrel tails, by the way. If you're bored during this pandemic, go on a squirrel murdering fiesta. They'll give you like a quarter a piece. It's totally not worth the bullet. But anyway, I digress. Continue.
Yeah, you really messed up my train of thought here. But here, the thing is that a generation or so ago, Muskie 360 listeners, they all of these synthetic products were taboo in the spinner, the bucktail world. That's why the lure is called a bucktail.
Because it's hair.
If you natural deer hair, natural buck tail, and so you know if you didn't, and one of the things that made the Booker tail so well accepted way back is that we had great tires that really knew how to dye and tie natural bucktail so well. Now, you know, in today's world, you know, tinsel is arguably, or flashable and all of the other products like it, are arguably more popular. And they come in a much wider variety of colors. So what's better? It's, you know, there's still situations where that natural bucktail and really a more subdued pattern produces fish. And there are those anglers of yesteryear, just like you're talking about, good baits are just good baits. They can throw an old natural MEPS Booker tail and any of the other old bucktail products and catch just as many fish as the guy fishing flashables. So is it a personal preference thing? You know, do fish love different colors in certain situations? Yeah. But, you know, a lot of companies like ours today even offer a flashable bucktail combination. So, yeah. You know, it's honestly, there isn't an easy answer there. And, you know, that's where experimentation is. It's like fishing different plastic worms and different color crankbaits and stuff for bass and walleyes and muskies and anything else you fish for. You need to just try these things on fish and see what they want. Let the fish. It isn't always absolutely. So much what you want. And here's one last thing. It goes right back to that blog I just said. If you believe in a product,
yes,
you fish it harder, and you basically make that dream come true, or make that, you know, your confidence. You build your confidence every time you catch another fish on it. You go, oh yeah, this is the best, you know, best color pattern, best flashable pattern, best natural perch that there is, because you're confident in it. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the next guy who's fishing Fire Tiger, and he's catching more fish than anybody else in his waters, and so on. So. It's one of the things that I will say about colors, and this is something mm-hmm. I just covered in an article. There's a color article on Muskie 360 that covers this. Mm-hmm. When I'm on a spot that I know have fish, no matter what the species, but muskie, same thing. That's the time to try different colors on.
And see if there's a different response.
And see if there's a different response to it. You know, see if there's a better response to a subtle color. See if there's a better response to a loud color. That's where Elvis comes in. You know, that's mm-hmm. where colors like that come in. It's like we learned that under those dark, overcast conditions, you know, and that just right after sunset and into first darkness is that loud, bright-colored ice tail with a chartreuse blade, a very bright, loud, you know, in your face kind of color, was definitely superior. What it created was a stronger, more violent, more aggressive response. Mm-hmm. And yet on pressured waters, especially on pressured waters, these guys fish with smoked blades. I know a guy that fishes in Jimmy Sarich Muskie School every year, and he is the number one fisherman in Jim and Steve's Muskie School.
Right.
And he fishes a smoke-colored blade on a black bucktail. That's it.
Oh, dude, I knew an Indian guide on Eagle, right?
Yeah.
Brown skirt, gold booker blade, and that was it. That was literally his guide tackle box. Like, it didn't matter if it was snowing. That was it. But the guy caught fish. What are you going to say?
Big old Bill Sandy, you know, the most famous guy in Lake of the Woods. He said, what's your favorite?
If you put a gun to my head and you're like, you can pick one bait, I'd be like, black booker tail 700, silver blade, that's it.
That's the Bill Sandy bait.
Yeah, and you just go, you could make it. I mean, I could catch them in the winter if you're willing to reel slow enough. So, yeah, like you said, do you know what's interesting about like all the color questions and stuff and preference questions is a lot of this just boils down to no one's ever going to be able to give an empirical data answer. Because, let's talk about that Elvis fish for 2 seconds, that one you and Chaz went and picked off, right?
Yeah.
If you had had on a...
Elvis in the evening, that Elvis episode in the evening, 3 weeks. Yeah.
Right. But theoretically, if you would have had on a 700 classic bucktail booker tail, mm-hmm. or buck hair booker tail, mm-hmm. would have hit? We'll never know.
Well, we don't know that. That's right.
That's what perpetuates this, I think.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy a lot of times because you're fishing them. That's right. You don't know that for sure, but, you know, I'll tell you one thing that I definitely know for sure. As a marketing guy, you know, when I own the company, and all of the good fishing lure manufacturers know this, and, of course, you know, fashion people know this, is that colors definitely catch fishermen.
Black and Goldilocks, folks. Black and Goldilocks.
When you all the flashy colors, all these uh-huh. flash blues and all these flashy colors, guys will go to these muskie shows and they just buy it because they look good.
They show up on my boat and they're like trying to flex on me. Yeah, you know, it's the modern bracket. Like, check out my show colors. I'm like,
they bought it because it appealed to them. It didn't appeal to the fish, it appealed to them.
Well, the next one up, Joe, is Ron G. He says, my question is regarding boat etiquette. I'm very familiar with stream etiquette while trout fishing.
But now that I have a boat and I'm fishing for muskies with one or two of my friends, I want to know if there is boat at all I can think about is me breaking your rod. The whole time I'm reading this, he says, all I want to know is there boat etiquette. Sharing a hot spot and casting position inside the boat. Is it okay for the boat owner to always get in the bow position and therefore has first shot on a spot? What about casting angles? Is it okay for the guy in the back of the boat to cast in front of the boat or the person or cast past the person on the bow? Or is it a free-for-all and anything goes? I understand that generally it's a best to work as a team to get fish in the boat. So I want to know what your guys' take is on boat etiquette. But I can't say etiquette. I say etiquette because I'm a dense Southerner. Anyway, he loves the podcast. Ron G., we love you. I've got a lot of thoughts on this, but what's like, I've fished well, with you. What, what's your thought?
I'm going to wrap this. My wife is waving me at your supper, so I don't know if this absolutely. Is a 3-hour. Is this a 3-hour podcast?
It just always prattles on. Okay. I mean, we stop when we get through.
I want to hit this etiquette thing hard from two angles.
Yes.
One is boat etiquette between boats. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, boat etiquette today, and I know it's because of tournament fishing, and it's probably because of freeway traffic
mm-hmm.
and congested traffic. People are living in congested traffic situations in life, and you know, when they go to work every day, and I think I can't believe how many anglers on the water today will see somebody fishing a spot or fishing a shoreline and just literally gun in front of them, you know, a couple castings in front of them, shut down, drop their trolling motor, start casting and think that's okay. It's not. Mm-hmm. A generation ago, two generations ago probably, when my early days of guiding, when I first started guiding, as part of the guide association I belonged to up in Boulder Junction, you know, it was one of those things that it was really an unwritten law that, hey, when, you know, that guide's on that spot, you know, you don't even go there unless you're fishing with him and it's an invite thing and you're doing a guide party together.
Right.
You don't even fish that spot. When I pull on a lake and I see even today, I still use that etiquette. If I pull onto a spot, even on these Wisconsin lakes, I see somebody fishing a spot, I'm not going to go on that spot and try to compete with them on that spot. And I don't recommend anybody else do that too. You know, leave that guy have that spot. Fish mm-hmm. it when he goes, fish it when he leaves, but don't try to compete with somebody on that spot. Yet I know people do it time and time again all over the U.S. and Canada.
Absolutely.
I think it's a bad deal. In the boat, here's the way I do it. And so I'm just telling you this the way I do it. The bow guy is the boat control guy and the lead angler, and he should stay in that 10 to 2 o'clock position. In other words, he's fishing 10, 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock. He's fishing in front of the boat. He's fishing a lure a lot of times that complements boat control.
Mm-hmm.
He does not turn 9s, 8s, 7s. He does not turn and fish perpendicular alongside the boat. You do not do that when you're fishing with other anglers. You stay up in front of the boat. And when I've let other anglers fish with me, early in Chaz's career, I gave him a butt chewing a lot. But you know, mm-hmm. Chaz has been one of my best proteges.
Absolutely.
Ever. He's a
stud. Yeah.
When I first started fishing with him, you know, after I catch a couple fish on him, and I went out when he's gonna hate this, but the first time I took Chaz to Canada,
right.
We went 7 days and he never caught a fish.
Oh, burn. Yeah.
And you know, that you know, as good as Chaz is, you know, that was a tough deal.
Well, fishing then, behind so you is a little tough, yeah.
Well, but I started giving him I started giving him bow space, you know. I mm-hmm. said, give you bow space, but then I want you to fish, you know, I want you to you fish the way I do on the bow. And the first couple of times he was up there, he all of a sudden he'd be 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and he'd be fishing all over. I said, no. What? I said, you're not fishing there. If you're going to, otherwise you come back here, I'll go on the bow, and then I will stay up there in that 10, 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock range. And, you know, you leave the center of the boat for the guy in the center. Leave that perpendicular casting for the guy in the center. Do not infringe. You got plenty of room up on the bow to do that. Mm-hmm. And if it's your boat and you want to be the lead angler and you're the best at boat control and you don't get off of that bow, that's fine. But then, you know, let the angler in the middle and the guy in the back, if you're fishing three guys, the guy in the back, one of the things I try to suggest the guy in the back do mm-hmm. is you fish fish lures that are that are different from everybody else.
Yep.
And cast further.
Oh, I grew up as the guy in the back of the boat. That's why I love crankbaits. Do something different.
Yeah. Do something different and cast farther. When you're fishing shallow water lures, hey, the guru's in the back of the boat, you know, filming for us right now.
Yeah.
And when he's back there, you know, he can lob that bait 14 miles.
He's 7'5". The guru's a giant.
He's a guru giant, and he's got that big 9-foot, big nasty rabbit. Right. Shows that thing 14 miles. Yeah. And he'll throw big topwater, big blades when he's fishing perpendicular. And then he also does, you know, things unusual. I'll tell you what, Guru's been really successful with this, throwing strange lures, like odd colors. Mm-hmm. You saw him with this, you know, this clown color. He was clowning around. He was catching fish doing that. So, you know, he remember he's fishing with you and me last August. He was having a lot of success throwing chrome. Remember the chrome?
Yeah, throwing chrome, and he's banging.
And he's fishing behind the one and only Stephen Paul.
Which is a tough gig, I'm just going to tell you.
Which is a tough gig, that's right.
It's a tough gig. Well, Joe, I know you've got to go eat some supper. That redhead's going to beat you black and blue.
She's not
she's
happy.
She's teed up. She is teed up. I can hear her fuming over my headphones. Just like a raging bull.
Well, I filled in for Chaz today, though.
Big shoes.
Big shoes.
All right.
Dude's going to hate it that I told that story about him going the whole week without a fish. But because he blanked out on me on this seven days. No fish.
Yeah. He got whooped for more 7 days.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want that karma on me. Have a good night, Joe. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Muskie 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in big fish products, and The Muskie Shop.